Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast. It is August 23rd, 2021. We've had a nice long month off.
Have we ever taken this long off?
Of podcasting?
Yeah.
I think we have. I think last year we didn't. Maybe, I don't know, actually. I can't remember. But I was thinking seriously that maybe we should never come back to the internet world.
Yeah, it was kind of nice to have a break.
So, and...
And everything's gotten so much better since we've been gone.
Yeah.
The world has improved so much.
Maybe
that's because we haven't been podcasting.
That everything's gotten better.
Yeah.
If we had kept podcasting, maybe...
It would be worse.
Oh, man. I don't want to take any kind of credit for any of the things that have happened in the last month. So, our extensive show prep.
Which involves scrolling through Twitter until you find something.
We didn't even really do that today. We had a whole month to think of a lot of things to talk about, and we didn't do that at all. Like, pretty much all the things I thought I was going to do this month, I didn't do. Which is as it goes. That's how it works. So, what do you want to talk about? You want to talk about our vacation?
I guess. I mean, that's what
the vacation highlights.
I'm sure that's exactly what everyone wants to hear.
Or do you want to complain about Calvin College's?
We can talk about that a little bit if you want.
New woke video. It's not new though, is it?
I don't know how old it was, but if you haven't watched it, I posted it on Facebook and on Twitter. It's about 15 minutes. It's the longest thing I've seen. I mean, I guess it's a promotional video, but every member of every department, it seems like anyway, but I'm sure there's some left out, but of Calvin University repeating, Black Lives Matter, and then not just saying the words, but going through and mouthing the entire ideology of CRT, I mean, just is of
whatever it's called.
Whatever we call. I mean, it's hard to find it. People who agree with elements of that kind of thinking don't like the word woke because they consider it to be insulting. So I don't want to use it. I don't want to insult anybody. But that way of thought. In fact, a while back, I wrote down a list of different things that we object to that I think are contrary to the Christian faith involved in critical theory or whatever you want to call it, so that we can avoid using a label and just say, okay, well these are the things we disagree with about it. I forgot about that. And we started recording, so I can't.
Where?
It's on Twitter somewhere.
It's on Twitter somewhere. Here's all the things that are...
But watch this. It didn't seem like religious. It seemed like a new kind of religion was being... The video is very much like a liturgy, like a
well, a creedal. They were all saying creedal, some kind of creed, and the words are not. They don't correspond to any words that have been used in Christianity ever before, I would say.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing that impressed me about the video. And all of this way of thinking about people is that it doesn't sound Christian at all. It doesn't look, I don't know, the way that people talk.
Well, they kind of bought into the idea that the original sin is racism, and everybody is involved in it. Every white person is involved in it, and that's so. I've argued for a long time that's slanderous because it's both racist and slanderous because you're characterizing people by the color of their skin for one, and two, you're making an accusation of a whole race, regardless of what we think about that idea of race. You're characterizing a whole group of people as fundamentally wicked, not because of their participation in original sin, which would include everybody, but because of their the color of their skin, which means they're necessarily involved in the sin of whiteness, and they're in ways they don't even know and racist. That was a part of that video. Psychologist came in the video and said, well, we all know that we all are racist in some way.
We all have implicit bias.
Right.
And so at Calvin University, we're going to help you get rid of your implicit bias. If you come here,
right.
You should come here. And then there was a person who apologized for the difficult time that Black students have at Calvin College, which I thought, if I was sending my child Calvin and somebody in a promotional video said, it's so hard for Black students here, it's so exhausting and I'm so sorry, I would be like, okay, well, I'm not sending my kid to your school.
If
it's that exhausting, why would any of us come here?
Right.
Which means that the word is, it means that it's not exhausting. Like, it obviously means the opposite of what they are saying, which is that if you go there and you're a Black student, you're going to have an easy time. They're going to cut you a lot of breaks. You're not going to have to try as hard. Your feelings are going to be considered at every single moment of every day, which is also something I wouldn't be interested in as a parent. Like, when I send my child to college, I want them to have a fairly difficult time and to struggle against ignorance and stupidity. And
I don't want my kid to have an opportunity to say, well, the reason I'm having a hard time in this class is because you're racist, or you're treating me badly because of my skin color.
You work hard. You're not going to, but working hard is a white construct. So, you know, you circumscribe everything so that no matter what you say, everything doesn't have any meaning.
Right.
Which,
well, I mean, I you're right. Think of the way the words like trauma are used, right? Or exhaustion. You know, when someone who agrees with that way of thinking is confronted, or you disagree with them publicly, the response is not a reasoned argument. Usually, sometimes it is. It often is then, oh, I'm just so exhausted by fighting for justice. This is making me so tired of my brave struggle for liberation of the people of color. And so you don't have a conversation because then it's
a everybody's so tired immediately. Right. Which, again, the biblical counter to that is, do not grow weary in doing good. If you really think you're doing good, the Bible commands you not to be tired and to keep going.
Right.
But scripture's not really in the mix, so I feel weird about even bringing it up.
It's almost impossible to have a discussion or a debate on this because the presuppositions are the worldview is so contrary to the Christian one. So the presupposition going in is that everybody, or there is necessarily racism in the systems of this nation and the West. And so where there is disparity, that must be because of racism. Whereas the biblical view would say, okay, there may be prejudice, there may be racism in a system or in an institution. Let's see the evidence that that's actually what's happening. If you think the system of sentencing is unfairly biased against against Black people, There's statistical ways that you can actually check that out. There's measures. Examine the policies. Look at the number of incarcerations. Look at the number of the prison sentences. Compare them. Take all the factors into account. But that's almost antithetical to the critical race theory way of thinking. It doesn't matter. The disparity itself is the problem. It's not if it were shown statistically that it really wasn't a racist, the result of some kind of racist policy, it wouldn't matter. The outcome being disparate and one of disparity means it's racist. So that has to change.
So the conclusion is drawn before any of the evidence is examined.
Right. Well, and also the, you know, it's a different, someone made this, maybe I'm confusing these two terms, but someone was saying there's a confusion between equity and equality, right? So the, so equity is the idea that everyone should have an equal opportunity to succeed. There shouldn't be anything, any limit to someone on the basis of skin color or ethnicity or sex in society. But then the equality says not only that, but all disparities should be erased, so that at least on racial and ethnic and sex lines, so that it's not just equal opportunity, it's equal outcome that they're looking for. And that, of course, is, that goes back to Marx, and
which we're not supposed to say that.
Yeah.
I mean, how much, just to pivot slightly, how much of our vacation did you spend thinking about critical race theory?
I mean, I just quite a bit, because I read Owen Strain's book and then Bodie Bauckham's book. So I thought a bit about it. And we got a chance to interview Owen Strain on the Stanford.
On the Stanford. Yeah. So you did do something productive during our time away. I listened to the Strain book as well, and I did not really want to because I'm tired of thinking about this. And but it was really good. Yeah. It was... it's entry into the Christian world. So even if you've read Cynical Theories or something like that, it's more about how the church is.
Right. Been impacted by it.
Yeah.
Impacted.
It's been impactful. Its impactfulness has fallen upon the church.
Right.
And I think that's, well, it was interesting. It was helpful for me to watch the world go by because I didn't totally unplug. Like, I read a lot of news over the last month, but I just decided not to comment on any of it.
Yeah.
And it's so bad. Like, it's so un-Christian. That's my sadness about the critical race theory idea or wokeness, if you want to call it that, is that the Christian, it's not Christian. You can't say that it is. You can't take it and use it in a church and end up with a Christian church.
Right. You'll end up with a body of very angry social activists. It produces anger. I mean, on both sides, because the people who are become fighters for quote unquote justice are enraged because of the injustice in the past, and so they're trying to right it by political action. And the ones who see through it are enraged because this is a
perversion of the gospel.
Right. Even in the last part of that video, the guy trying to articulate the gospel, and I think it was a professor of history trying to articulate the gospel, and it was, you know, Jesus Christ came to liberate peoples. And ultimately, yes. I mean, when he comes back, there will be no more oppression of any kind. But the chief form of liberation that Christ came to effect is the freedom from sin. And that's something that we all are under the power of. He came to save us from the consequences of sin, and to free us from its power. But when you socialize that, when you make it primarily about liberation from systems of oppression, you've stepped out of the biblical realm. In a society that has become Christian, would there be less oppression? Of course. That's something that does change as a result of the gospel. But that's not the gospel. That's not what. It's just a continued confusion on the.
What I liked about Strahan's book is he kind of went at the question, the people who have been saying, who have been making fun of the people like me who have said, well, you should try the gospel. You actually haven't tried the gospel.
Yeah.
That's why you should try it before you decide that you can't, that it doesn't work. And that view has been like maligned, roundly, mocked on Twitter. If you say on Twitter, I think you should try the gospel, then a mob will come and say, well, that's stupid. It was already tried and it didn't work, so be quiet.
All right, sure.
And I really liked what Strahan, he re-articulated the gospel helpfully to explain why the gospel is the only solution to oppression, in fact, which is such a basic, this is so interesting to me. It's so basic. Like, the Bible is so clear. You can so clearly understand what it says.
Right.
So if you go to it and you're not getting it, or you think it's inadequate for the problems that you face, you're the one that's wrong. It's not God's problem because he couldn't communicate with you, and you need Marx to come in and help you a little bit.
Right.
It's a good book. I think people should, if you're really not sure about what to think, or you're afraid as usual.
Rody Bachman's book was good too. He went into more, I think Rody probably did more number crunching. Like, okay, is there really, let's take the arrests of black people versus white people. Is the claim that a young black man is more likely to be arrested or stopped and hurt in some way by the police than a white person? And he kind of unpacked the numbers and said, well, that's not really quite true. And by the people being shot, is that primarily a young black man or a young white man? Or is there truth to the claim that that's something that primarily happens to black men in a disproportionate way? And he unpacked his numbers and said, that's really not. So it's interesting because what he does is what needs to happen is that when there's a claim that there's racism in a certain system, well, let's look at the evidence and find out if that's true. And if it's true, there needs to be reform and repentance.
It's a great and clever way to actually avoid the true sense of the moment. We don't have any cat food. We're gonna get some right away. The cats are gonna die. The enormously fat cats are about to perish because we forgot to get cat food yesterday. So
yeah, I know. We took our Christmas cat Gloria to the vet last year, and she was fairly large then. I would say she's enormous. And the doctor said, "Oh no, she's not fat."
She's not too fat.
But, I mean, I think she's grown since then, isn't she?
By grown, what do you mean?
She's become a larger person.
She's more substantial.
Right.
She's so wonderful.
She's a cat of significance.
You should not have fat cat phobia. You should affirm her sense of who she is.
But she's heavy. So she pounces on you at night because she wants your milk. That's what she was doing. She wasn't waiting. There was food in her bowl. She was waiting for milk.
At 3 o'clock in the morning.
Because I make Aunt tea in the morning, and I put milk next to her bed, and the cat
waits
for that.
So she can come and drink it all. It's not good for her. So what were we just saying?
We would just switch from
cat.
From critical race theory to cats being fat.
there's a link somewhere. Oh, well, I do think I would like to enumerate the sins of the present, like the besetting sins of the West. I do think there's a lot of them. I can't think of them right now. But, well, it's so interesting because I'm this plague book that I blogged about yesterday. You read it early on and you kept saying I should
The Great Mortality.
Read it. And I was like, I really don't want to read it. I don't want to listen to 12 hours about
that.
The play.
Of all the books I wanted to read, that's the one that I didn't think you'd actually taking up on.
It's really discouraging. The plague was really bad. words fail me to say how
the plague was really bad.
How bad the plague really was.
I should tweet that.
I just wanted to go out there and observe that the plague.
Yeah, it was 30% mortality, 40% mortality.
In some places. Yeah. So, there were two kinds. So one would strike in the fall and one would strike in the spring. So you could die in two different kinds of ways.
So that's not just 30% of the population getting COVID or 40% of the population getting COVID. That's pretty much everybody being exposed to it and 30% dying.
Yeah.
40% dying. We don't have anything like that today.
But one of the interesting things about it is it seems as we've gone through COVID that there is this vestigial memory of the plague in the way that we as a world have reacted to COVID similar to the way that the world rightly reacted to the plague. But it seems like there's haunting notes.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that bad, but it's like there's some kind of speaking of generational remembrance. For instance, I think that generations and generations and generations can remember, say, racism or slavery without knowing that that's what they're doing.
The Spanish flu.
But there's no way to quantify it. There's no way to heal it either, apart from the gospel.
Right.
Like, you can't really get away from what your great, great, great grandfather did, even though you don't know him, unless you have Jesus, because Jesus does know what your great, great, great grandfather did. Like, if your great grandmother wandered into a field and left and never came back, and then your grandmother did that, and you don't know why. Why do all the women in the family wander into a field and never come back? It's a great mystery. Or what motivates a person to go steal another person and sell them? And then the next generation does it without remembering that the previous generation, they thought it was their new idea, but it's not a new idea.
Right.
You cannot fathom the depths and wickedness of the human heart. You can't understand why you do the things you do, let alone your ancestors.
Right.
Only God can know that. So it's really interesting. I think it's wonderful and terrible that the current and every generation thinks that they can fix it and can know, and puts solutions onto the world. Like, for instance, when the plague comes, what we need to do to solve the plague is round up all the Jews and kill them. And then God will be appeased, because that's what God wanted.
Right.
Well, that's it right now. What God really wants us to do is to flatten out the world so much that we can just apply simple terms like whiteness or racism. And if we just do that really fast, then
we'll fix injustice.
We'll fix it, and God will be appeased, and everything, the earth will heal. Well, that never works, even though every generation tries to do it.
I think it's more zombie movies.
We need more zombie movies?
No, I mean, I think that's what, I don't know if it's a vestigial remembrance of the past plague. I think they're like all of the zombie movies, because it's like this, people are watching the zombie, you become a zombie by the virus. Like, you catch it and you become a zombie, or you die and you're a, like with the
I've never watched a zombie movie.
You should watch the.
Oh my word!
You should watch the.
I'm not gonna watch a zombie movie.
The famous series of zombie shows.
Walking Dead.
Walking Dead. Yeah, that's what happens. Everyone in the world got a virus, and you become a zombie.
I don't think I should watch
it. So like when COVID came out, I mean, I'm sure maybe the plague was a vestigial part of it back of mine, but also zombie movies.
Actually, that makes more sense. You're probably right about that. But are people doing what they did in The Walking Dead right now?
Well, I mean, No, The Walking Dead. I mean, you just got it
because
you
Walking Dead, Waking Dead.
Walking because you had there's this kind of secret virus that went around. No one knew about it until people started turning into zombies. And it was, by then, like everybody had it. And if you didn't have it, you could get it by being bitten by a zombie if you didn't have it. So anyway, I don't think I have time to go into The Walking Dead, but it's a great series until season seven it goes bad. But that I think is.
I'm not watching just because I read The Great Mortality doesn't mean I'm going to watch.
You're also reading Lord of the Rings. You're finishing.
Yeah, I am.
You're doing that.
So what I'm having to do though, because I can't handle everything, so I've given up reading the Bible until I finish Lord of the Rings. I'm reading the Lord of the Rings devotionally in the morning in place of reading the Bible because I can't handle. It's already hard for me to read the Bible. Like, the Bible is hard. It's hard because it's really depressing and repetitive, and there's a lot of long names, and there's not a lot of scenery descriptions, but people do travel long distances, and it also seems like it just goes on forever and ever.
You were confessing you liked it yesterday. You were saying you thought it was good.
It is really good. I mean, it's like objectively really good. I think the word that I used yesterday was flawless. Mm. It's a good book. I'm just going to go out on a controversial limb here also and say The Lord of the Rings is a really good book.
And in the same way that The Plague was really bad.
Yeah, The Lord of the Rings is really good. So I'm glad I had this long holiday to like really go deep into thoughts and words and describe things more better.
Well, the good thing about you reading Lord of the Rings is now you'll get me and understand who I am as a person. Because before, see, I've done that all over. I'm not sure if we shared this with our podcast audience, but everyone.
About you that you're better
marriage,
than me.
I've made a point of studying you by reading books that you love, because I want to know you as a person, and I just feel like it's important for me to understand how you think. So from the beginning, I've made a point of trying to read books that you've read, and then I noticed that last year that you hadn't read a single book. You just had no desire to read the books that I
don't so, really have a desire to read the books that you read.
Yeah, so
I want you to notice that I'm reading two books. Like, I you so belittled and shamed me by pointing that out that I've read now two books that you really liked. The Great Mortality.
Oh. But see, now that doesn't. Okay, I just read the book last year. That's not like a key. That's not a book that has made my heart sing.
Oh my gosh.
I
can't believe you just said that. You can't. Well, what other books?
You need to read Dune after this. You need to read, let's see, Cimmerillion.
Oh my word. So here's the problem. The books that I like to read are pretty easy because I'm not that deep and I'm not that smart. So I can read a lot of Alexander McCall. I love 44 Scotland Street. You don't ever want to read those.
Sweetie, okay, but I don't like fiction.
Yeah, and I don't
and
like history.
You started reading Ian Rankin, and I started That's reading true. Ian Rankin just to be.
And now you really like it though.
Yeah, I know.
He's really good.
Because I'm the kind of person that loves you. So it turns out that things you like, I kind of like.
I also really love you. I'm the kind of person who's able to love other people without having to like really go all the way to fully understand who they are. I can sort of estimate it.
That's funny. Cause...
By observation.
That's funny, because even though he, being God, he didn't count equality with God as grasp, but instead made himself like a servant and became like
Okay, so if being a servant means actually, I can't believe you would really want me to read Dune.
Yeah, what should we do?
Oh man. Well, this is going to be a long decade. As I try to, I thought reading Lord of the Rings would.
I mean.
Would pacify you.
It's been a lot to me. So you get mad if you're going to ask you where you are in the book. So.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it. It's a very stressful book. I am liking it. I am enjoying it, but I can't just like binge on Lord of the Rings. That's what I'm saying. We have to replace, if I were to read Dune, I would have something else in my life would have to go away. That's my new law. I'm making a law on top of the law, which is that if you say yes to one thing, you have to say no to one or maybe two other things. So in order to read Lord of the Rings, I've had to say no to the Holy Scripture. That's it. So if I were to read Dune, I don't know what else. I might have to stop exercising. So you can't just do everything that you want to do. You have to put limits on yourself. That's my new pop psychology. That's what I learned on our vacation was the...
Know your limits. You've learned to know your limits.
Yeah.
Woman.
Yeah. Know your limits. It's really funny that the election yesterday was Ephesians 5. I'm really shocked that the makers of the Anglican lectionary would put it in there. That's so brave.
I wonder how many...
And I'm wondering how many sermons were preached on that particular text.
Or how many churches decided to not read it.
Yeah, because you could just read like the Old Testament and the New Testament. Right. Or just read the Psalm.
Right.
And skip everything. So.
But I think that's even in the Episcopal lectionary. Wives submit to your husbands.
I don't remember it being there.
I think it is. I think it's in Sunday. I'll have to look it up. I think it's in Sunday Episcopal lectionary. But I'm glad they carried it over to.
It's really shocking.
They did, however, I noticed. Maybe I'm back to go back and check for sure. But while they had the wives submit to husbands, as with your wives in Ephesians 5, Ephesians 6 skips from all the way down to verse 15. So it doesn't do the, okay, children.
No, they had children obey your parents.
Did they?
Mm-hmm. Slaves that was masters. Part of, I don't know about that. But
they skipped that part.
They had children obey your parents. Which I also thought was kind of shocking.
Right. But they, okay, so they skip over.
Maybe they skip.
I think they skip the slavery part.
Maybe they're going to do it next week.
No, it's not there. This week is, go straight to the armor of faith. The armor, the
spiritual warfare, stuff. Right? Yeah. That's nicer than children and.
Yeah, so I know like some people are going to use the opportunity of the lectionary working through Ephesians to work through Ephesians, and I'm wondering if they went ahead and skipped that or they dealt with it.
Yeah, because if you then it ruins your book series if you don't do that, huh? Well, yeah. So, well, what else did you like about did you like anything about our vacation? We should talk about that
for 5 minutes. For like a long time.
It was a long time of camping. It was.
I enjoyed the first 6 days, 7 days with you at Bowman Lake
State That's Park, a nice place.
Which is very nice. I really enjoyed it.
I like camping alone without children. Like, I really do like to camp.
Yeah.
I would like a teardrop camper, I've decided, after putting in a lot of camping this time. I don't want one of those huge things. I don't mind tent camping, but I'm aging, so. I think we need to like get a big jar and start putting pennies in it to buy one of those cute, adorable teardrop things.
It costs like $5,000.
Yeah, because I really like cooking outside. I want one with the bed inside, but the little kitchen part on the back. So that because I really like cooking outside.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It's really nice. So I liked all the cooking over a fire this time. The culinary,
you did really well over the camping.
I don't know why, because like I don't ever make crumpets. Although now I have crumpet rings, so I'm gonna try to do it. But when I'm home, I don't think you know what I want to do right now. I'm gonna like spend 4 hours making crumpets. But when I'm in the wilderness and it's hard to do dishes and hard to get water and hard to cook them and hard to, like, everything is harder, that's when I think I need to spend the entire day making crumpets.
But that's because you don't have, you know, I think it's probably because you don't do anything else, right? You're sitting there reading. You're reading.
Yeah.
Or you're cooking.
Yeah.
And that's basically camping. Or you're hiking somewhere. But no, it's good. The first, it rains, like the first, the campsite we were.
It was so bad together, we had to abandon our.
Like a mud bowl. It was like this shallow
bowl of mud.
Of something. And when it rained, it just became mud. So we got a new campsite, which is really nice. And then we came back. Got the kids, went to another place near Ontario Lake, or on Ontario Lake, Fair Havens State Park. Was really nice, beautiful. Our campsite wasn't so great, but it was still a great place.
We were near the Ren Fair, so there were a lot of Renaissance people wandering around playing the flute. And
we didn't know that, or we would have brought.
We didn't go to the fair because we didn't even understand why people were playing the flute. It was really nice. The flute playing people just hanging around waiting for the fair to open up, that was a great bonus.
Right. That was nice.
But then there were also the rock music.
People wearing weird costumes.
Oh, yeah. There were costumed people wandering around.
Like this couple moved in beside us.
In the middle of the night.
In the middle of like 11 o'clock and sort of
banging their tent pegs in.
Yeah. And the man, I think it must have been like 45, 50. He insisted on like wearing tight leggings everywhere he went. I don't think I saw it.
No, he did. He only wore very tight.
And it was embarrassing.
Yes, I was embarrassed. All of us were so embarrassed. We didn't know where to look or what to do. But we tried to be friendly. Yeah, where is the Christian men's modesty crowd?
Yeah, I mean, that was
that was really great. There was also the rock music crowd. Like we've come out to the wilderness and we're going to play our radio really, really loud.
Play, not heavy metal, right? It was most country, wasn't it?
It wasn't new country.
The new country. It's like just blaring.
New bad country.
Yeah. So. And the beanbag thing.
Yes.
I mean, I think that if we would have filmed but a couple campsites over, this big family group, I guess they're having a family reunion or something, and the utter joy and ecstasy that
with the beanbag game
got, you know, there's like these boards and you toss beanbags into the hole in the board.
And you do it like day and night, all day, all night, and you're just so...
I mean, if we had videoed them and sent it to the beanbag making company,
they would have
been all over them. So that would have been a new commercial. Like, this is family. And it never seemed to get old.
Like, I tire of things pretty easily.
But they didn't tire of the new music blaring at the top of it.
And the beanbags. It's pretty wonderful.
Yeah.
So,
and then we came back and let's see, what else happened?
We painted the office and the bathroom.
Yeah. And that's, you did most of that work, I think.
Yeah. You moved things around for me and then I painted. I like painting.
And then we dug a hole in the backyard for a garden.
Yes. Pond. So we're going to have a pond. This is going to be so wonderful, except that the tent blew over.
I dug it when they had said it wasn't going to rain, and of course
it rained that day.
Then digging it starts raining, and put this tent over it, and then the tent collapsed yesterday.
So I've wanted a pond for a while. Well, we weren't really sure what we wanted there, but a pond seems like the best thing. So I think it's going to be really wonderful.
And Emma got into college finally, so not like just a 2-year.
She's going to go to Broome first, which is really great because she doesn't know what she wants to do with her life. And I've come to realize that I'm not interested in an exploratory college.
Spending thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars when someone decides, you know what, I think I want to drive a taxi.
Yeah. She can do that without a degree.
Right.
But she actually, she's excited about school. And, you know, she wants to stick close this year also while she figures out her life. But so that's great. And everybody else is gearing up for school. So
we went to a great Baptist church. I don't say it lightly as an Anglican. I love my Baptist friends and brothers, but I'm just not a fan of, usually in my past experiences of Baptist worship, I've enjoyed the sermons usually, but not the worship, because I think it's the really modern type where you have like really loud rock music or I Love You Jesus kind of music until a sermon, and so you just hope to come in late so you just hear the sermon. Or you get like maybe a more traditional thing. It's going to be like the I Walk
in the Garden Alone,
right? The kind of old time kind of old revival hymns.
Mm-hmm.
The Anxious Bench back in the 19th century or early 20th century.
A lot of Fanny Crosby.
Yeah. Which, okay, that's fine. This is not, I don't know. It's just not my taste. And then, of course, the differences about baptism, but that's another story. Being
right, like
Anglican versus Baptist. Right? But otherwise, I mean, we believe the same gospels and Jesus, so it's not a bad option. I just haven't enjoyed the church that I've been before. This church, however.
Well, this church is basically Anglican, so I think that's why we.
I mean, we got in. All the hymns were classical hymns.
Anglican hymns.
English hymns. Things we sing at Good Shepherd all the time. And
the organ was amazing.
I nearly died. I mean, I was so happy yesterday when they played.
I greet thee, my sure Redeemer art.
Yeah, that's my favorite hymn. And they played it. And they did have a liturgy. It started out with the first prayer is always.
Well, it's the pastor reading the Anglican confession prayer. Yeah,
as if it's his own.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same one. So obviously the congregation knows he's
reading it every week.
Because it's the same prayer. But he like stands up and he does some freestyle prayer that's actually.
The Psalms?
I'm thinking he's right. Yeah, I think he wrote it down. Because I don't think it's freestyle. Right? So, yeah, he's quoting or paraphrasing Psalms. And then he'll move kind of gradually into the confession, which is.
The Anglican confession prayer,
right. You confess that you've sinned against you.
And then the comfortable words.
Yeah, and then the comfortable words. He always has he rotates between the four.
Well, we didn't.
The four texts, I think.
I don't know. We didn't go all the time.
Well, one time he used Matthew's, come to me all who labor and are heavy laden. The other time, yesterday, he used the First John,
yeah.
To confess your sins, Christ is just to forgive your sins and cleanse you from all unrighteousness. That was Anglican, and then you know he.
Well, it's actually the Bible,
and it also
which is Anglican. Yeah, so it's the Anglican Bible,
right? So if there's a definitive liturgy that's followed every time, they sing the Gloria Patri,
and a really nice benediction at the end, a sort of a going forth thing,
yeah.
And they said the Lord's Prayer.
Yeah, that was amazing, and they have a reading of the scriptures. It isn't for the sermon.
And a responsorial psalm.
Right, right. So yeah, sometimes you'll go to a Baptist church and they'll read it.
They read whatever they're
going to be preaching on. That happened, but it was, so they also read
like
from Ephesians, and there was a
random thing from
Timothy.
I'm sorry,
it was from Timothy, and then a responsorial psalm. So, and the preaching was good. It was very good. Young guy, I think he's probably in his late 20s, maybe. I knew the pastor who was there beforehand. He used to come to our church
on his vacation,
so
which is telling. So
maybe he stole.
I don't think that you should rave too much because I don't want anybody to go to this nice church.
Right. Right. Well,
unless you believe in
I won't tell you the name of it or where it is.
Yeah. We're just going to keep this as a hidden secret for as a Christian should do.
Right.
When you. Well,
you find where the bread is, don't tell anyone.
Yeah, don't tell anyone. Make it really hard. That's what Jesus did. in the gospel yesterday.
Yeah.
And that when he had given out all the bread, he was like, no more for you.
I'm your, no, he didn't say that. He said, I'm your, I will give you the bread.
Which is essentially forever. What you're saying.
It's not true.
Well, I feel like we've talked a long time and we're back now. So,
yeah.
I guess this podcast will continue as long as it can until we're told we can't talk anymore.
Right.
And we'll try to get back to work. It's really hard to go back to work after not doing anything for months, but.
Yeah, I'm dreading it.
Anyway, here we are, and thank you for listening, and maybe we'll be back next week.